To start things off today, a man I admire an enormous amount. His name is Mike Sexton. If you've played poker or watched poker on TV, you probably have heard the name Mike Sexton. He's a member of the Poker Hall of Fame. He's the winner of a World Series of Poker bracelet. He won a couple of million-dollar prizes at the WSOP, taking the Tournament of Champions in 2006 and finishing ninth in the Big One for One Drop just a couple of years ago. He's cashed 46 times at the series. He's also been a spokesperson for one of the biggest online poker businesses in the world, Party Poker, which he helped launch. And he's now in his 15th year as the play-by-play man for the World Poker Tour. And he's also been honored for lifetime achievement earlier this year at the American Poker Awards. He now has written a book about his life. It is called Life's a Gamble. He is the poker ambassador, Mike Sexton. Happy to have you back on the show, Mike.
Now, Paul, always good to be with you.
Nice to have you here. I was going to include in your list of credits there a man who was once nicknamed Smoker, even though he's never had a cigarette.
Yeah, when I was in college, that's what they called me. So I never liked the name because I never had a cigarette. So I didn't care with. I didn't tell anybody about it after I left college. But
why were you given that name?
I was given that name because every night in the dorm, we'd play hearts or euchre or gin rummy or poker. And everybody would go by and say, well, you know, who won last night or something? And they'd say, Sexton smoked them again, you know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, because I won most of the time playing with those guys, they started calling me Smoker because I smoked them every time. So
Gotcha. That's
how that nickname came about.
Gotcha. Okay, we're going to talk about a lot of your ventures over the years in just a moment here. But I got to ask you, how is this WSOP, this World Series of Poker, going for you so far?
Well, this was not going so great for me. I've cashed one time, and I played nine events, and so I'm behind here, and I didn't cash neither of the 10,000 events that I played in. So I'm loser so far at this year's World Series of Poker. But currently right now, the WPT 500 is going on at Aria Casino in Las Vegas, and it just started on Monday, and I happened to play on Monday and got through the day. So I'll be back for day two, which is taking place on July the 5th. They have six day ones, and then they have one day two where everybody comes back for. So I'm already in the money there, going to make at least $1,500 there, and might make some more. So who knows? I might get out of the trap and make a lot more.
Nice.
Get lucky on that day, so we'll see.
You write in the book that the World Series of Poker changed your life in 1984. How?
Well, it changed my life, honestly, because it was the first time I ever attended the World Series of Poker. And I was playing for poker professionally in North Carolina at the time, just in home games. I always wanted to go to the World Series, but it always took place when my Little League season took place. I was an avid Little League coach back in the day. So anyway, I decided to go to the World Series for the first time, 1984. Now, back then, you go out and play one event every other day. That's all they had, the tournament. They played the tournament all the way down to the final table, and then when they had the final table, there were no other new tournaments starting. So you could only play three tournaments in a week back then. So I went out for a week. I played three tournaments, made two final tables, and because of the success that I had that first time I ever went, I said, you know, if I'm going to be a poker player, it's time I moved to Las Vegas. I knew I was never going to miss another World Series because I loved it so much. And so January of 1985, I moved to Las Vegas, been there ever since. And I often wonder if I had not had a good World Series, if I didn't get those two final tables, who knows if I'd have stayed in North Carolina, what would have happened? So it's funny how things change.
Yeah, you know, it's often said that when people go and gamble at anything, poker or craps or roulette or blackjack or whatever it is, if they win the first time, now they've got the hook in their mouth and they can't get it out. They're going to have to go back over and over again. And that was kind of true of you with the WSOP, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was. And when I went out and played on junkets back in the 70s, I'd go to Las Vegas. So I'm the first time I ever shot dice. I didn't know how to play. I didn't know what to do. And the next thing you know, I made $1,500 shooting dice. I had no idea what I was doing. I was just following a fellow guy. He said, come with me to the dice table. It was 10 minutes before it's time for us to go eat. And I went 15. I said, you mean I've been out here all this time and I haven't played dice? I didn't know this thing existed here. What? That was the worst mistake of that. I won the first time shooting dice. So
yeah.
That didn't work out so well as poker, I can tell you.
Not in the long run. It never does. That's how the casinos stay in business.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Mike, how do you think poker has changed in these years? You turned pro in 77. You went to the World Series in 84. Here we are in 2016. What's different about poker now?
Well, poker was changed dramatically, of course. We had the poker explosion back when the World Poker Tour first started. And the show started airing in 2003. And because No Limit Hold'em was a game they played on television, you know, before the World Poker Tour came around, you couldn't find a No Limit Hold'em game in any casino in the country. And now that's about all you find in the casinos. There's no limit hold'em. And so that's changed, and that's the main game everywhere now. But what's changing the players is they're so much smarter now than the players from the old days. There's so many more good players now. They're just highly intelligent young guys that have played millions of hands online. They've studied all the poker books, of which are thousands now. And, you know, they have software that they can practice their game. And literally, it's just the intelligence level, I think, of the player today, how much they study the game. And when they come into poker now, they're very sharp right in the beginning. Whereas in my day, you know, it took you a long time to become a good player. You had to pay your dues, as we say, and there were no educational tools to really learn how to play back then. And so it's just a different era than it is nowadays. So certainly players are far more aggressive now than they used to be back in the old days. And but because they're so good, they're more aggressive. They understand the power of chips. They understand betting. And it just makes it very difficult now to play these days in terms of, you know, winning these big-time tournaments. They're not easy to win.
Yeah. I can tell you, as a cash game player, I've definitely seen the game get harder over the years. Maybe it's because some of the people who weren't that good, who got caught up in the rush of it, either went broke or got bored or went away. But also, the quality of play among the people who used to just be good has increased to very good, or in some cases, great. And I think that that's not necessarily a good thing for the game, because when you see recreational players coming in, you know, somebody wants to, okay, I got a couple of $100, so I'm going to try this poker thing. We used to play it in Jimmy's basement. Now I'm in a casino, and I'm going to try it there. They can run into some rough treatment at the table, and I wonder how many of them get scared off and don't become longtime lovers of the game. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, no question about it. When people first start playing, they go to casinos, you know, if they go through $500 real quick in a game, you know, that might be it for their poker career. They may not play it anymore, and who knows? I wish that everybody, when they first started playing poker, would just play one table satellites for $10 or $20. Well, that's all they could lose. But you get so much poker experience, and it's so much fun to play, where you don't jeopardize your bankroll and stuff. And I think satellites, you know, are the way to go for people to protect their bankroll. And I know because of space reasons and economic reasons and all, casinos don't spread those that much. But I really believe that would be the best thing they could do for new players, is to have maybe $20 buy-ins, maybe $40 buy-ins. A one-table satellite, you know, where a guy can play for an hour or two on that $40 and then play another one. So he can get a lot of poker in for a couple hundred dollars if he did that. And I think they would enjoy the game more and learn how to play it better, and then try their hand in a cash game later, where they're much more prepared.
You know, most of those things that you're talking about, where people put up $10, $20, $30, $40 and play against each other, a lot of that's going on in America's basements now, not in casinos.
That's true. Yeah, a lot of people have little home tournaments now, and everybody comes in and buys in for $20 or $50 or whatever the number is. Doesn't matter. But it's a get-together, and it's challenging, it's fun, and people do enjoy poker that way.
Now, I want to talk to you about one of my pet peeves, and I've recently written a couple of columns about this on my blog, and I know that you have paid attention to it over the years, and that is the poker pace killers. These players, particularly those under 30 years old, who come to the table, and while poker should be a serious game and you do have to make some decisions in there, they take so long to make every decision, even when they've got Jack 4 offsuit preflop and it's been raised twice and they know they're going to fold, they still have to take 30 seconds to think about it because they don't want to give anything away. That drives me crazy, and I wonder what we can do about that.
Well, we can do what we did on the World Poker Tour in our WPT Tournament Champions we just held a month or so ago. We had an action clock where players had 30 seconds to act on their hand or their hand would be killed. And every player got four additional time buttons, we called them, where they could throw one in and get another 30 seconds if they needed more time to think. It was fantastic. It was extremely popular by all the players. And I believe it's the future of poker. I think every cash game and every tournament in the world should use the action clock because it speeds up the game and it makes it more fun to play for everybody. And certainly when you're in a tournament, you get out many more hands per hour, so you like that. And then the cash game is not as boring, and those guys that stare you down and take minutes and such a long time and then fold their hands, it's just horrible, and it turns people off from playing.
Absolutely.
Every sport has a shot clock for a reason, because it speeds up play, it's more entertaining for the players and the fans that are watching, and poker is no different. We need an action clock full time.
I agree with you, and I would bet you that these poker pace killers have made it much harder on the editors of the WPT. They must have to cut out a lot of dead time, because you're not going to show us some guy sitting there for 3 minutes on TV.
No, we do not show that. And, you know, we show a guy for 10 seconds, somebody closed the clock on him, and some viewers don't understand why a guy would close the clock, but they didn't see the 3 minutes or 5 minutes the guy was taking before the clock was called. And so definitely that's a part of the game I believe that needs to be improved and can be improved, and we saw it improved with the WPT tournament champions. I was thrilled the World Poker Tour tried it out, and I loved it that all the players were raving about it.
Now, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Mike, that you think that the WPT was responsible for the explosion in poker. You don't think that it was the so-called Chris Moneymaker effect or the real launch of a lot of online poker sites, including the one you're affiliated with, Party Poker?
I think those things played a role in it for sure, but without a doubt, it's television on poker. When the World Poker Tour hit the airwaves, it was on the Travel Channel the first 5 years on Wednesday nights, and it was Poker Night across America. There were no other shows back then, and it was very popular, and there's no question that it was television that was the reason for the popularity of poker. Now, obviously, after the World Poker Tour launched, wasn't long later until Moneymaker won the main event. A few months later, that helped. And then, obviously, that's when online poker was taken off as well. So it was the combination of things that caused that volcanic explosion in terms of the popularity of poker. But the primary reason, without a doubt, was the World Poker Tour being the first poker show on television in prime time.
It's Paul Harris talking with Mike Sexton, the poker ambassador, who's written his autobiography. It's called Life's a Gamble, and it's an amazing story. If you would, Mike, I'd like you to share what I consider to be the most amazing story in the book, out of a lot of them, and there's a lot of gambling stories in there, but the one that really sticks in my mind as outrageously unbelievable, although I know it's true, was when you helped kick off Party Poker, which was one of the biggest, at the time, became the biggest online poker site in the world. You helped kick it off by going to India and sitting down with their software people, and no one in the room knew how to play poker. How is that possible?
Yeah, not just no one in the room, no one in the company, actually, knew how to play. They had an online casino site, these people, for a few years. So they knew online gaming, they had banking, they had affiliates set up, and they were doing all well with the casino sites where they had blackjack and slot machines and stuff. But they heard that poker might be the newest thing in the online gaming world, so they were just going to start a branch of their company of online poker, just thinking, you know, nothing, expecting not big things at that time. And they were looking for what they called a poker domain expert, and they ended up hiring me. A week later, I was in India working with the software guys, and in 5 minutes, when I met the team of five that was going to put this poker site together, I was astonished that none of them knew anything about poker, you know. And so we literally started by, you know, you start with a button, player one's in a small blind, player two's in the big blind, and then player C, the first guy to act, has options A, B, and C. You know, he can call, he can fold, or he can raise. And back then it was strictly limit poker that we started with when we started developing the site. So, you know, that was the only options that they had. And that's how we did it. And literally, we did it for every game. We started with Hold'em. Then we went to seven-card stud, and then stud eight or better, and then Omaha, and then Omaha eight or better. And literally, that's how we developed the poker site. I was there a few months while they were doing that. Then I had to go to the Dominican Republic, where our customer support was located then, and train them about poker because nobody knew anything about it down there. And then we launched Party Poker on August 1st of 2001. And the rest is history. And people don't know because we've been out of the U.S. since basically, I mean, we're back in now in New Jersey, but in 2006, we had to leave the United States because when they passed UIGEA, which was a law that they had passed, and we were a publicly traded company, and the lawyers had told the owners that if it was deemed they were doing something illegal, they could lose back the billions that they'd already made. And so they had no choice but to leave the country then. But you have to recognize we were the Coca-Cola of online poker back then, Party Poker, and had 58% of the entire market at that time when we left the country. That included Poker Stars and Full Tilt and Hold'em and Bet All Roll into One. They only had 42% between them all.
But what's amazing about that story is this is the equivalent of being hired as a consultant to a bakery, and you go in on the first day and you talk to all the, quote, bakers, and nobody there's ever baked anything. They don't know what bread is. They've never seen a cake. I mean, did you have to take out a deck of cards and say, okay, here is a pair, here is a full house, et cetera?
Yeah, it was pretty astonishing. And the most amazing part, in less than 4 years after we started the Party Poker site, the company went public on the London Stock Exchange for $8.5 billion, the largest float in 5 years, and you know, it's an amazing success story that really a lot of people don't even know about. And, you know, the company grew faster than everything. The day they went public, it became bigger than British Airways and bigger than MasterCard. And that's how big the company was back in those days. So it was a fantastic ride to watch the company grow from nothing to be the biggest site in the world. It really was. It was exciting.
Now, you said that they're back in New Jersey, which is one of the states, along with Nevada and Delaware, that are allowing in-state online gambling. We don't have it in Missouri. We don't have it in Illinois. We don't have it in 47 states right now. When will we have it in other states, and when will we have it on a national basis where the federal government doesn't tell you what to do with your recreation dollars?
Well, hopefully that takes place, but it's going to come state by state first. And, you know, the things that I'm hearing, Pennsylvania is close to doing it, California is close to doing it, and New York is close. So if those big states, if any of them get started, I think the others will follow like dominoes, and they'll recognize the inventory, I mean, the revenue that they're missing out in terms of tax dollars. And so I think other states will follow suit once those do it. And then hopefully, you know, the players in all states where it's legalized can play together, and they can play with people where it's legalized in other countries, and we can get back to the old days of online poker where there's many games to choose from and a lot of players online to play. So hopefully that's going to take place in the next year or two. We'll see what happens. And, you know, I'm like you, it's mind-boggling to me that the government can tell you what to do in the privacy of your own home, well, with your own money, when you're not hurting anybody. And there's millions of people that love to play a $20 buy-in tournament at night when they get off work, where they might win $1,000, and for the government to say they can't do that is just sort of mind-boggling. To me, it's not even about online gaming and the online poker as much as it is freedom of choice.
Yep.
And, you know, we're supposed to be in the land of the free, and, you know, how people can't make a choice what they want to do with their money. I mean, some people like to shop. Some people like to play golf. Some people like to go to the movies. Some people like fine dining. Well, millions like to play poker, so how can you not allow them to do that with a recreational dollar if that's what they want to do?
Yeah, you can go online and buy as many staplers as you want, but God forbid that you have fun playing a card game online. All right, now, I know that the book is not just about poker. I read this, and it was one of the best books I've read this year, Mike. I'm not saying that just because you're a guest, but because I really, really enjoyed it, and I breezed right through it. And you have some stories in here about gambling on the golf course that are unbelievable. Would you please share the John Henry Reeves golf kicking story with my audience?
Oh, yeah. This is when I lived in North Carolina, and this guy lived in Virginia Beach. We'd go up there once in a while to play cards and golf, and he'd come down. So he came down, and we're playing golf in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And this guy was a good golfer. You know, he's about a 4 handicap. And so we're on the 16th hole of the golf course. We all teed off, and he hit the farthest drive. And the three of us, it's the shortest par 4 in the course. So we all hit it up on the green in 2. And now he had a wedge in his hand and chunked the wedge. And hit the third shot, he bogeyed the hole, the easiest hole in the course. So now he's stomping his feet in the cart I was riding with him. Instead of driving to the next tee, you know, he's screaming and hollering. He said, I could have kicked the ball on the green from where I was. I said, what? He said, that's right, I could have kicked it on from where I said, John Henry, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you 10 kicks, and if you get one of them on the green from where you were, you win the bet. I'll bet you 500. He said, you got a bet. So now we drive back down to the middle of the fairway where he chucked the wedge, and he starts taking his golf poles and putting them out in the fairway. I told him he could punt the ball, he could put it on a tee and kick it, you know, like you're kicking off a football. Any way he wanted to kick it, I didn't care. We got it on the green, he won. So now the other two guys in the foursome had driven to the next tee, and they saw we were back in the fairway, so they come back. And I told him John Henry thinks he's Luke Rosa and can kick the ball on the green from here. Now, Luke Rosa was a famous kicker for the Browns back in the day. But anyway, so they started laughing. They said, well, I want to bet you can't do it either. So he bet them 500 apiece, too. So now he starts kicking these balls. He started to punt the first one. He hit right on the shin bone. He falls down the ground, rolling around in pain. And we're laughing. It was the funniest thing you've ever seen. Then he started saddling them and trying to kick them on the green. He didn't get one ball within 25 yards of the green, I don't think. And so now he lost the hole, and they lost another 1,500 to all of us. But to this day, that's the funnest thing I've ever seen on the golf course.
Yeah. And by the way, not the biggest bet you've ever made on the golf course. You made some for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars that you've wagered out there. And you tell stories about that. And you also talk about playing in private poker games in Los Angeles. And there's a great story in here about Telly Savalas. I wish we had time to get to all of it. But I got to close out here with two questions for you. One is about why poker doesn't yet get mainstream advertising support. You know, if I watch the WPT or the WSOP broadcasts or Poker Night in America or any of these televised poker things, I do not see Pepsi. I do not see Apple. I do not see Nike. I don't see the biggest brand names in America advertising and supporting our game. Why not?
Well, the problem with that is companies recognize the numbers. We still get a million viewers a week on the World Poker Tour, and you know, which is pretty good. An advertiser would take notice of that. But the truth is, all the companies are fearful of getting involved with anything that's gambling-related. They don't want the religious right to protest their products or to, you know, do any of that kind of stuff. Yeah. So the owner remained Switzerland. And because of that, you know, I think that they're hesitant to get involved in sponsoring any kind of gaming activity at all. And that's the primary reason. Now, we've had sponsors on our show, Southwest Airlines, Budweiser, you know, and some beers for the first couple of years. You know, and I thought that was going to start and kick it all off, but after a couple of years, you know, that they don't do it anymore. And I don't know if they're fearful of, you know, of people protesting their products or something. They just don't want to take that chance probably. But, you know, if it gets legalized in all the states that we're hoping for, I think you'll see a different attitude from these companies because they recognize a lot of people play. And because of that, you know, everybody buys products in the poker world of any, you know, just like everybody else does. So I do think that once it gets legalized and regulated, you'll see mainstream corporate America coming in to sponsor poker tournaments, poker events, poker players, etc.
Well, what's ridiculous about that is it is legal to go play poker in casinos in, I think, 48 of the 50 states now. We've got casinos in almost all of the USA, and there are people like you and me who are playing it on a regular basis, and, you know, by the dozens, by the hundreds, by the thousands, by the tens of thousands, and yet I guess the advertisers just, they're too worried about exactly that bottom line thing. It's sad. All right, my last question for you, Mike, is I know of all the things I mentioned up top, the thing you're probably proudest of is your son, who is, what, 8 years old now?
He's seven. He'll be 8 in August, actually.
Okay. Have you taught him to play poker, and how much has he lost on the golf course?
I have not taught him how to play poker, and I'm not going to teach him how. I'm sure he'll know how before long, probably, but I really just want him to get a normal education first, and obviously if he gets out of college and then, you know, would want to play poker or try it or something, be different. And, you know, I'm never going to stop anybody from pursuing their dreams because I did it when people said you shouldn't be doing it. So, but on the other hand, I know how tough it is to make a living playing poker. I'd certainly prefer to get the paycheck every week. It's a much smoother lifestyle in terms of up and down in the financial world.
Yeah, and the golf course?
And the golf course, yeah, I hope he plays golf. He's starting to play a little bit now. He's going to camp now where he's swimming, playing tennis, and taking some golf. So I would love him to play golf because I think that golf is a phenomenal way to, you know, I think a country club life is as good a golf life as a person can have. You know, if you're successful enough where you can belong to a golf course and play golf and meet other business people there, and, you know, I highly recommend that for anybody. And I think it's a fantastic game to play. And, of course, as I say in the book, it's the best betting game for sure because you can equalize golf. Doesn't matter the skill level difference in the players, because where's the handicap golf where everybody's equal? And, you know, I could play Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth tomorrow if they gave me enough spot, you know. So that's the beauty of golf. And in the book, as you said, there's a lot of great stories about golf. And I can't imagine anybody that likes poker, that likes golf, or likes action of any kind that's not going to thoroughly enjoy Life's a Gamble. It really is a fun, entertaining read book.
It absolutely is. Mike Sexton, the poker ambassador, the play-by-play man for his 15th year now of the World Poker Tour. The book is called Life's a Gamble, and it's quite a read. And it's always a pleasure talking to you, Mike. Thanks for your time today.
Okay, I appreciate it. They go to Amazon.com. They can order one today. Thanks.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.